You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Let's do our UFL show, talking about my week two power rankings, talk about my MVP power rankings, and we got an interview with Matt Corral on deck. But let's again start with the UFL power rankings after week one. We're going to go from number eight to number one. Eight teams. Somebody got to be at the bottom, somebody got to be at the top. But at number eight, I have the Houston Roughnecks off the rip. I thought perhaps they needed a little bit more out of the backfield. Now, Jared Guantano was great, 16 to 21 for 157. Seemed to come together there a little bit at the end, but they had a really difficult time moving the football, even as that defensive line is going to be a problem for the league. The rest of the nine games, I think, are really going to go their way. If they can get USFL Offensive Player of the Year last year, Mark Thompson back to do some nice things for them, I think they got a shot to make a run, but getting that loss at Rice Stadium to start the season, not great. Number seven on the list, I'm going with the Arlington Renegades, who took a loss to the Birmingham Stallions, which, you know, that's what they do. We'll talk about them in a little bit. But I thought, given what Coach Stoops has on that roster, I expected more, frankly. I expected to see Luis Perez a little bit sharper. And when they brought Lindsey Scott in, I'm thinking that's a guy that threw for 4,000 yards in college. He's running the ball quite a bit more than I would like to see him. I'd like to see him sling it from time to time, if you're going to have him out there. And he did, right? We got to see him throw it a couple of times inside the 25-yard line. But mostly, I'm looking at that defense. I'm looking at the offensive line. I'm going, you can't give up the kind of yardage that you were giving up if you're that defense to the Birmingham Stallions in week one, when it seemed like Matt Corral was having a really difficult time trying to figure out what you were doing. I thought that Chuck Long was finding some things that worked for Luis Perez while they were also trying to find a way to run the football. But I'm not sure that there's anything nice to say about a defense that gave up 16 points in the second half, offense that scored just three at home. Again, you are the defending XFL champions, and there was XFL and USFL pride on the line for both of those, as that was the clash of champions. And it looks like the chasm between the Renegades and the Stallions could grow larger if Coach Stoops doesn't get it back on the good foot. At number six, I have the DC Defenders, who also took an L to start week one, but returned the XFL's Offensive Player of the Year in Jordan Tamu. And if he doesn't go 25 of 45 for 235, I'm not sure they're in that game late. But they weren't really in that game to begin with, because it got away from them in the first half with a few things that just didn't go their way. And then Gene DeLance made a bad situation worse, right? You pick up the personal foul penalty for spitting on a player, right? That moves, that takes off a TD, and then it moves the ball back 15 yards. And then you move back another 5 yards because Gene DeLance had false started on the play where he ended up spitting on someone else. You get it way out of position to where you could try to go see it six. And then Jordan Tamu gets hit so hard, he goes down. They got to take him out of the game. You got to bring in DeAndre Francois. It just was not a good look for the DC Defenders. And Reggie Barlow's got some work for himself and his staff, as this was a team that was 9-1 last year. Granted, they start this game on the road, but against a San Antonio Brahmas team that we didn't think was going to be that good, and really got taken to the woodshed, and is still looking to score its first TD of the season. I think I have them at number six, though, because I see the talent there. I know what Jordan Tamu is capable of. I saw Ty Scott making some plays here and there. I think they can find a way to get this thing righted and make a run, beginning even this week, right, toward the playoffs. Again, we're week one of a 10-week season, so a lot of moving and shaking here, but it's difficult to see positives from that Defenders team, given that they were really putting themselves in harm's way, and you got to do something about Gene DeLance. That can't happen. That was an opportunity to take the game back, and they just weren't able to do it. Number five on the list, I have the St. Louis Battlehawks, who seem like controlling the game at Ford Field against the Michigan Panthers for most of the game, and yet could not come up with a win. I thought, one, A.J. McCarron knows exactly what he is doing. His return to that franchise has really given them a lift, because having that experience going into year two at the quarterback position is invaluable in a league like this one, where continuity is not a given, right? Where you got to have a guy come in and pick it up on the fly. Say Matt Corral at Birmingham, saw that, how that started in the first half. A.J. McCarron comes in knowing what he's doing, and when you are trying to run the ball and you can't, he's looking at you going, put the ball in my hands. And when they decided to do that late in the game, it looked like they had an opportunity to go and win it. He finishes 24-37, 216. But I think the point to raise here is they had this game won until you get a 64-yard field goal from a kicker that hadn't made a field goal since high school. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But I think the Battlehawks can make a run to the playoffs. I think it's a really good football team. It just didn't go their way in week one, which ain't no sin. But you can still turn that around and take some positives from what they were able to do well, both offensively and defensively. All right, now we're getting to the top half of the UFL. And I got the Michigan Panthers at four because they won the game, right? They beat the Battlehawks. And if I want to be harsh about it, I could probably put the Battlehawks ahead of the Michigan Panthers based on how the game progressed. But I got to give credit to a team that found a way to win at home when they didn't win at home until the last season, or last week of last season, last year, right? Mike Nolan getting that win at Ford Field is a tremendously big deal for that franchise and for those fans that really want to see that team win at home. Now, also in there, EJ Perry did not have a great game at quarterback. Two interceptions he threw in that. Couple of plays that I know he wanted to have back, but Wes Hills actually showed up to be a pretty doggone good running back. He was great with the New Orleans Breakers last year, 11 rushes, 85 yards. And then you had a team that bent but did not break defensively. Right. I really like DeShaun White, former Oklahoma Sooner. Right. But I also like that they got Breland Speaks back there. I think that that defense could really be outstanding and really be the strength of that Panthers franchise if EJ Perry does not turn the ball over. And then you get to play the kind of football I think Mike Nolan wants to play, which is controlling the clock on offense and then grinding teams out on defense. But there is no substitute for having an outstanding kicker. I mean, looking at Josh Bates coming out cold, he'd been hitting from 65 yards without a rush. And Mike Nolan wasn't in position to where he wanted to say, I'm going to throw him out there to try to make 60 yarders on week one. But they didn't really have a choice, right? They needed to go get the points. It's 64 yards. The game is on the line. Josh Bates had not kicked a field goal since high school, comes out, kicks the ball, finds out the timeout to get him ice, puts through the uprights. So one, you get to know that he's got the leg for this and he has the accuracy for this. But to come back and do it twice in a row and then to win the game, yeah, man, that's giving me Brandon Aubrey vibes, right? For those of y'all that are coming over from the XFL, Brandon Aubrey was a known commodity in the USFL for the Birmingham Stallions for a couple of years. Matter of fact, the general managers in that league would be like, why isn't this guy getting an invitation to NFL training camps? Well, he did. Last July for the Dallas Cowboys, and went from playing for a USFL championship to all pro and setting a record for the most field goal attempts made in a row, 19, in his rookie season, right? Josh Bates is going to get a call to go to an NFL training camp this summer. I know that because I've already had NFL personnel tell me, yeah, we saw the leg. We saw him do it twice. We saw him do it with the game on the line. We saw him do it against the rush. That guy has a role in the NFL, and that's exactly what I think the UFL is trying to do. Showcase these players that may have been forgotten about or may not have had the opportunity to show. Remember, Brandon Aubrey didn't play organized football until he got to the USFL, and Josh Bates hadn't kicked a field goal since high school, and now he feels like one of those guys that's a shoe-in to get into an NFL training camp come July. Number three on the list, let's talk about the Memphis Showboats. I genuinely love this team. I love this team because I love the city of Memphis. I love what the University of Memphis has meant for that franchise. And I really love John DeFilippo, who got his first opportunity to be a head coach last year for the New Orleans Breakers. And I thought did a really great job making that team really freaking competitive. And one of the reasons that was so is he, like Skip Holtz with the Birmingham Stallions, calling the plays from the sideline, holding the play card. But I think with Case Cookus, you could have one of the best tandems in head coach, play caller, quarterback that we have in this league, because Cookus came off the bench for the Philadelphia Stars in 2022 to become their starting quarterback, comes back in 2023, and has an outstanding year once again. I think between those two guys, you have a quarterback that is a veteran in this league, has played a lot of professional football, and a head coach, play caller, quarterback's coach, John DeFilippo, who has been an offensive coordinator in the NFL, who helped coach Nick Foles into being a Super Bowl winning quarterback at Philadelphia, and a guy that is going to demand that his quarterback understand the offense and goes out there and makes some plays. And I think Case Cookus did a great job of doing just that. I would like to see him take a few less savage hits. I don't want him to get hit that often as much as he did. And I know that he wants to take off running with the football, but that ain't what it is, right? That ain't what it is. You a married man now, right? That's how long he's been in this league. He has since got engaged, got married, and now he's back in this league as a veteran. I need you to start reporting yourself like one. They were also able to get scoop and score against the Houston Roughnecks. I thought the defense was showing up in a good way. But if that relationship between Cookus and DeFilippo blossoms, it would not shock me at all to find out that the Memphis Showboats make it into the UFL's inaugural playoff season. All right, let's go to number two on the list. I got the San Antonio Brahmas here. I thought, one, for Wade Phillips to become, believe it or not, the first head coach to be a head coach at three different Texas pro football franchises, very cool. But he's coming over from being a Houston Roughnecks head coach, and he's bringing that staff with him. So I didn't really know what to expect, and I'm learning about them on the fly, right? Say on the fly, since the merger. And I was looking at who they had at quarterback, and Chase Garbers, known commodity at Cal. I get that. But A.J. Smith, offensive coordinator, showed me a lot, right? Now, XFL folks would know that's one of the more innovative play callers in that league last year. And also kind of a wunderkind. This is a guy who was calling offensive plays for a high school at 21 years old. He knows from football, and he was really good at getting Chase Garbers and that offense into outstanding positions to go make plays. But I was more impressed by not the 27 points they put up, but Chase Garbers just taking care of the football, which is no mean feat in the UFL. Scored three TDs, two passing, went for just 19 to 25 for 158. But again, you didn't turn the ball over, which means you gave your defense an opportunity to pin its ears back and go get people, and they responded, right? Four sacks of the DC Defenders quarterbacks in that game. And then you're bringing back a guy who's a great playmaker and Jontre Kirkland, who was wide receivers and quarterback at LSU. He had eight catches for 61 yards and a TD, right? That's solid day's work for what's going to probably be your playmaker. But the guy that broke the game open with the thick six was Alex Mollett. And I, like you, had a lot of fun watching Brad Wing with the shade visor on, drop back, scan the field, and find the center wide open who was eligible and not only make that pass, but Alex Mollett looked around and said, hey, that guys don't get down. They get into the end zone and ran it all the way in there. I was ecstatic for this, right? Because I know my guy, Jeff Schwartz, offensive lineman, one of my favorite offensive linemen, is already talking about this being the best play in UFL history. And you know what? We're not going to argue with that. That was really cool. It also opened up a lead for the San Antonio Brahmas to really be able to take control of the game in the second half. But I didn't expect to see a trick play on that particular down and distance. And I certainly didn't expect Brad Wing to throw a TD to an eligible center. Really excited about San Antonio Brahmas, who we thought to start going to probably be in that bottom four, right? But already they're 1-0, and they're looking like the class of the XFL conference. And then at number one, Birmingham Stallions, man. I am so impressed with what Coach Holtz and general manager Zach Potter have been able to do over the last 2+ years, right? Because one, you won back-to-back USFL championships. You take on the XFL champion in week one at their house, and you get a W by double digits with a new starter at quarterback in Matt Corral. That's one. Two is, you know, you win two in a row, you're good. You win three in a row, you're a dynasty. And that is what the Birmingham Stallions are chasing in 2024. They're looking to be dynastic, which in spring football, my goodness, man, with the amount of turnover that we have in this sport, with going from the USFL starting in 2022, the XFL starting in 2023, and then the merger to the UFL in 2024, to be able to go 22-3 over your first 25 games over a three-year season, I don't know that you could do any better than that, man. I mean, we could say undefeated, but that's really not fair. You know, I would say that what Birmingham is doing is even more impressive to me than the run that Georgia went on, because the continuity is not assured. It's that simple, right? You got coaches that come and go. You got players that are going into the NFL, going into the CFL, that were going into the XFL last year, and yet you're still able to put together a roster that can go out there and get W's. I'm excited to see what the Stallions can do in this league. Want to see if they can keep this momentum up. And we're going to talk about it each and every week for the rest of the regular season into the playoffs. Try to see who's going to be our UFL champion in its first season. But also, we're going to bring a new feature to the UFL show. I am not just going to give you my power rankings. I'm going to give you my MVP rankings. And I'm really excited about this, right? Because this league has been really good about creating stars, right? And we learned this in the inaugural season of the USFL, when it surprised me, shocked me to find out that the coaches in the USFL had voted Kevontae Turpin to be the MVP of the league, a wide receiver, a gadget player, a kick returner. And what does that dude do? He makes training camp for the Dallas Cowboys and is voted an all-pro by his peers and a pro bowler in his year, first year with the Dallas Cowboys, right? You come back the next year, Alex Magoo is having a season of seasons, right? Not only does that guy win your MVP, but he makes the Green Bay Packers, and he's still there, right? Reaping the reward of having an outstanding season, couple of years, honestly, in the USFL, where he gets to play in the National Football League, which is the ultimate goal for most of these guys, if not all of these guys in the UFL right now. So let's take a look at my MVP rankings as we stand week one. Don't spend a whole lot of time here, but it is important to point out that it's week one. So if you see a bunch of guys here that perhaps you got questions about, know it's going to be moving and shaking. All right. So we're going to go from 5 to 1 in my MVP power rankings. And to start with, I think we got to start with the St. Louis Battlehawks quarterback, AJ McCarron, because I think that guy showed me he is the straw that stirs the drink for the Battlehawks. 200-plus yards receiving, passing in that game. Had them in a position to win it late, if not for Legatron with the Michigan Panthers. They're going to open up they're going to get their season opener in St. Louis at a place that usually packs in around 30,000 people. If he shows the kind of progression that he did in the second half against the Panthers, it's not hard for me to see him moving up the list here. Number 4 on the list for me, Jordan Tamu with the D.C. Defenders, defending XFL Offensive Player of the Year. Reggie Barlow said as much. Like, he's like, look, we didn't expect Jordan to be available to us in the spring. We thought he would be on an NFL roster because that's the kind of talent that he is. An Ole Miss quarterback that has been playing his behind off in spring football league since he first got the opportunity. 25 of 45 for 235. A lot of fives in there. No TDs, though. No picks. That needs to change going into week two. Number 3 on the list, I got Case Cookis out of Memphis. I think he is going to open up a lot of eyes for folks that are new to the USFL conference and hadn't been following what Cookis' journey has been like since he was a Philadelphia Star the first couple of years in the USFL. I think he's a guy that can shock folks with his ability, with his talent. He's going to try to make a 53-man roster, if not a training camp, this year. But you can see he's got the gamesmanship and the ability to go make a play. I think the way that he wants it and the way that he lays out for his team is going to speak volumes about his play, but also that's how you go get that extra play made by those Memphis Showboats. And he's got guys, right? I think he's got the best receiving core in the UFL. We're talking about Jay Adams. We're talking about Vinny Papale Jr., right? I can keep going down the list. Lee Morris coming out of Oklahoma, tight end. I think Sage Surratt, Wake Forest. He's got dudes. I think between that receiving core and the play caller he has, yeah, 3 is a good spot for Case Cookis on this MVP list. Let's go to number 2 on the list. I really like what I saw from San Antonio quarterback Chase Garbers coming out of Cal. Now, I understand that his numbers were not the same as some of these other guys, but taking care of the football is a big deal to me. It's a big deal to football coaches. But his ability to get them in and out of great plays, to understand and be in sync with his offensive coordinator, A.J. Smith, and to not try to overwhelm the defense. Just take what they give you. Know that you got Jontre Kirkland out there, and also know that you can make things happen with your legs and running some QB draw stuff with him from empty. I think he's got an opportunity, especially getting off with a really great win against a team that was 9-1 last year, to be an MVP in this league. And then number one on the list, I have the best player on the best team in the UFL after week one for me. It's Matt Corral, right? What I saw from him was progression. He starts 3 of 10. He finishes 9 of 11. You could see him figuring it out on the fly. You could see how with each throw that he was asked to make, he got a little bit sharper and he began to trust himself more. And there was one play that was greatly indicative of that. It's 39-yard, just dropping the bucket to Deion Kane in the corner of the end zone to give them an outstanding TD going into halftime and really swing the momentum of a game that seemed like it was in the balance, because Corral had thrown a pick. He didn't seem like he understood what he was looking at. Looked like Jay Hayes, the defense coordinator for the Arlington Renegades, had his number. And then he goes out there and he starts making the kind of plays that made him a third-round selection out of Ole Miss in the 2022 NFL draft. His progression is only beginning. If he comes to the understanding, I think he will, with Skip Holtz's offense, sky's the limit for what he can do, which is another reason why I'm excited to tell you we have an interview with Matt Corral talking about his first weekend as a UFL player, what he learned, and what he hopes to achieve in this league. Let's go take a listen. I'm pleased to be joined by Birmingham Stallions quarterback Matt Corral. Matt, how you doing?
I'm doing well, man. I'm doing well. Living the dream.
So I want to start with this. You guys had a really great win against the Renegades to start week one. And what I was struck by was just how quickly you adapted to the game. I believe you started 3 of 10, finished 9 of 11, but no play bigger than the one to Deion Kane, the end of the first half, 39 yards. You drop it in a bucket. What'd you see on that play?
So I saw it was third and 10 plus. I don't remember exactly, but I saw they were in a one high in the corner, was just playing the sticks right in front of where our receiver was supposed to stop. And I looked at him and he looked at me and I gave him a pump signal just because I knew, like, I know he's a heck of an athlete. And if it's a one-on-one, I'm taking my chances with that. And, you know, he did his part. He got open and I just had to deliver a ball. He made my job easy. And the O-line did a great job protecting me. And, you know, I went out on a limb, just had a feeling that, you know, they were going to be in this specific defense. They were. We got it. And it feels good to, you know, make a check and it be successful. And, you know, it's just, I haven't been on the football field in a while. So it's good to really just, you know, get back out there and do what I do.
It seemed to look that way at the start, but again, as you continue to play, you got more comfortable. Coach Holtz actually said, look, after you got hit the first time, you were like, okay, cool.
No, I'm going to be honest, that's exactly how it was. And I told them that. It was just the, just cobweb, man. Just my anxiety just before I snap the ball. It's just, okay, how is this going to play out before I'm playing it out in my head as he calls a play. And it's just like, why am I doing that? And, it's just typical, like just nerves. And it never really went away until that hit. Once I got hit, that's when I just, my whole thing flipped and I was like, okay, let's play. And after that, it was just every single play. I'm not worried about anything else. Just one play at a time. And like you said, I was scratching and clawing, man, trying to make something happen in the first quarter. But, you know, we caught rhythm as a unit and, we pushed forward for sure.
Coach Holtz strikes me as a quarterback-friendly coach. Covered him the last couple of years, Birmingham, with Jamar, with Alex Magoo. I wonder, does that help you or hinder you knowing that you have this much freedom, but he also is going to expect you to make the right play at the right time?
It's definitely it could be both. It goes along the terms of, like, you know, see a little, see a lot, see nothing. Like, that's just the way the playbook is, the way, you know, he coaches it. Like, it's a perfect example. I wasn't supposed to make that check, but you better, like, if you make that check, you you better be right. And that's just like that fine line of, like, he lets his players play. But if you do something that's not in the system that you just went on a limb with and you mess up, that's on you. Like, you got to stay within the system and do what you're told. But, like, every now and then he's going to let his playmakers make plays. And that's what I love about Coach Skip. And he really knows how to use those type of players.
He also seems to be the kind of dude that can make his point without yelling, which, you know, my background, you yell at me, I'm probably going to shut down. Right. Tell me what I got to do. But he also went up to you. And I remember this on the sideline. I wonder if you can recall this. He said, after I dog cuss you, you go make a play. And you said, hey, I got you, coach.
Yeah, that was more of a, that's the type of player I am. I respond to negativity. He knows that. All of the coaches I've ever been with, they knew that. That's just how I was raised. I'm not a guy that's, oh, it's okay, you'll get it next time. Like, don't worry about it. Like, that was never me growing up. I was always a competitive. I had two older brothers, and, you know, and if I lost, they really made me feel like I lost. So it's just my competitive nature and just me wanting to answer to that bell one more time when I got knocked down and we weren't successful on this drive and we come back and, you know, we score the next, or whether it's I get rocked on one play and then make a third and 15 conversion to the field on the stop route. It's just little things like that that will help us as a unit, as an offense, and as a team, you know, push forward and get what we want out of the season.
I gotta imagine that means playing with a lot of emotion if you're the kind of person that is pushed by, you said, negativity. How does that translate onto a football field, especially when you're going through it in that first quarter? You see Adrian come in, you're not sure what's going to happen next. What's your mentality like on the sideline?
I guess I should just, like, backtrack on that, because it's not all about negativity. It's about, like, responding in the right way. Mm. You know, you can't be too low, can't be too high. And it's definitely about having perspective. You know, we mess up, we throw a pick on the second drive or the first drive. I can't remember. It was a screen play. It just bounced off the receiver's hands and then popped up. DB got it. Like, stuff happens. Can't do anything about that. But I like the way that we responded to that the next series. You know, we actually got some field goal points. And then there was a time where there was numerous times throughout the game where it looked like we were, you know, our backs against the wall, and we responded every single time. It may have not been pretty. Reads may have not been correct. Routes may have not run precisely as they should have been. But at the end of the day, we found a way to get a win. And it's just building on top of that. What did we make? What mistakes did I make in the game that we could correct this week? What mistakes did any mistakes that were made? Can we build on that and keep pushing forward and keep getting better to that standard that we want?
I'm reminded that you played for Coach Kiffin, who seems like the kind of coach that Coach Holtz is. He calls plays. He's also in your bunch. I wonder if your experience with Coach Kiffin helped inform how your experience is going with Coach Holtz.
I would just say my experience overall with the type of coaches I have helped me get ready for this moment. Mm. Because, like, I've never really had a coach that said, like, I'm not saying Coach Skip give me free reins to do whatever I want. That is not what I'm saying at all. But he lets his playmakers make plays, like I said before. And if I see something that's right, you know, you have the ability to make that check or make that. He has that confidence in me. And me as a quarterback, I was never I was always black and white. Like, you tell me how to do this and I will do it that way every single time. And that's the thing in the NFL and in the world I live in, there's no such thing as never and always. So there's always that gray area where every now and again, you might not always do that same thing every single time. And I think playing for Coach Skip has helped me get uncomfortable, getting outside of my comfort zone and being able to, you know, be my own play caller, be my own quarterback, and actually focus in on, you know, being who I am as a quarterback and as a player, as a playmaker specifically. and just running what I like and not just always being, not necessarily being a robot and doing everything. Like, it's hard to, it's really hard to explain, because Kiffin, when I was with Kiffin, you check a third down play, what are you doing? Like, why would you check that? This was perfectly normal. Like, you did not need to check that. And like, whether it worked or didn't work, that's how that was. And with Skip, it's like, work. I can't do anything. Just make sure if you check it and you don't get it, your butt's going to be hanging on my wall. It's just being able to be, you know, have confidence that kind of gives me confidence. And I know that gives Coach Skip confidence in me to do those sort of things. And it just goes both ways. And I think, you know, I'm not going to be doing every other play, but that definitely helps build me as a person, as a quarterback, for sure. Because, you know, like I said, I've always been that person that's just, hey, coach, you tell me how to do something and I'll do it that way every single time. And just being able to go out there and just play, call whatever play you want and just line it up and do it. And I think that was the best thing for me in this situation.
I'm really touched by that, because I'm the kind of person that also wants to know what it is you want me to execute and how I can go execute it, right?
Yeah.
And if you're going to give me the play sheet and not allow me to make a mistake, it's going to be really hard, right? As opposed to, you know that you're going to get a matchup. I'm going to pull Jay Sternberger because I think the world of him, right? You know you got to match it with that guy. And you can defend that on the sideline going, I know I can get him in a one-on-one. I know he will win. Like you said, Deion Kane was going to win. You got an athlete out there. And that goes and it works. And doesn't matter that it wasn't the play that Coach Holtz called. It's the one that worked, right? So everybody got the result they were looking for. I'm really interested in that dynamic, because coming out of Coach Kiffin's offense, drafted in third round by the Panthers, right? Spent a little time there with Coach Rhule. Spent a little time in New England. What did you learn briefly in the NFL that allows you think, to be a better quarterback in the UFL?
Just exactly what I was saying, just being your own person, and being your own person and having confidence in that person, whether it's on the field or off the field. I think my specific experience, I really think it goes hand in hand. When there's gray area, like of something that's not explained in a concept or a play, and they don't go over it because that's just, they don't think it's a, like, they don't, it's not important to go over. Some coaches may think it is, some coaches may think not. Everybody's different. Everybody teaches offense differently. And the ability to, like, if you look at the Coach Skip's call sheet, it's every formation, it's every concept, and it's every quick game, every sort of concept run. And there's no, like, it's just formation, concept, run, draw. Like, there's no, like, full play calls. Mm-hmm. So like, that's what I mean of like, it's a never ending cycle. And some like the same, if you run the same concept out of this formation, it's not the same concept out of 2x2 that it is a 3x1. So it changes. So that's what I mean. Like when I say being in this offense and Skip being able to just call whatever, and then me, okay, actually this is 2x2. This isn't the same as 3x1. So I got to look at it this differently. Like, I feel like that helps me for getting ready for the next level, because it's like, we didn't go over it. Mm-hmm. I should know it. It's the same concept out of 3x1 as it is 2x2, even though like I should already understand that it is a different read because it's not the same, because one's 2x2 and one's 3x1. And that's just kind of the, like, going out on a limb. It's like, I'm going to read it like this because I know this is how you're supposed to read it. And having the confidence in myself and then going out there and executing, and it works, and then nothing's ever said of it. And you just build on that sort of thing. And then it becomes a standard, and then it becomes like everybody molds to that.
I think I'm excited to see what you're going to do in this offense the rest of the way, because what you're describing to me is you're going from understanding the concept to point and shoot, right? And when you get to point and shoot, like you did in the second half, some really cool things are going to happen because the ability is already there. And you're already learning this offense at a high level. And Coach Holtz is learning what you like to do. So I'm excited, man. I'm also going to add in here, dog. Like, it's a franchise that's won a bunch of football games. And you win 3 in a row. You're a dynasty. You can be that dude. Matt Corral, thanks so much for taking some time to join us here on the number one college football show to talk about their first week in the UFL. And I wish you well the rest of the season.
I appreciate you, RJ. Thank you for having me.
That is going to do it for our UFL show on the number one college football show. My thanks once again to Matt Corral for making himself available for that interview. Let us know what you think of the show in the comments, on the tweets, on the Facebooks, and the Instagrams. Our number one college football show leads of screening are Jack Coakley and Torrin Westfall. They make us better in the film room. Additional support from Kiara Santana and Jim Cunningham put the special team, special in our special teams. Producer Javion Duncan make sure the recruits and the rivals see the cake we bake. Technical director Gabe Sable sends in the signal. Senior producer Catherine Cordaggi sees the entire field from the booth. Lead producer Tyler Wojak calls the plays from the sideline and the play snaps on my clap. We'll be back live next Tuesday to give you all the college football you can stand. Until then, stay low, keep those feet driving. Deuces.